Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this. I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered. Could just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. This is going to be a clean one. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Shout out to the man, the myth, the legend, super producer, Mr. Max Zestfully Clean Williams.
Soap me up, daddy.
Don't say that. Never say that again.
Shout out to Noel Brown.
I will not. That is me. Sure. I'm triggered.
Yeah. And you're Noel Brown, and I've been bullied.
Yeah, it is we. Yeah. I've got an image in my head that I can't shake.
You know, sometimes a lot of our conversations fall into like catchphrase things, and we just find weird moments of speech that have suddenly become strange.
Yeah.
I think we just had one right before going in.
I think we did too. It was very affecting. Sometimes we just can carry on entire conversations just with only catchphrases.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes just the same one over and over and over again.
Sure. Yeah. We did an entire Illumination Global Unlimited commercial. It's just zeros and ones.
That's right.
It's probably some of our best writing.
Our mental health is good.
Yes. Yeah.
A clean bill of mental health, if you will.
There we go. And as you might be able to tell now, folks, we are going to explore something a lot of people don't think about, which is just soap.
Oh, I thought it was antipsychotic meds.
Antipsychotic meds. I think about those all the time.
Those are the fun ones. It's true. Soap is, okay, so maybe we started out with a little bit of darkness here, sure. And then we pivoted to something that seems very squeaky clean and all-American and wholesome, but boy howdy, does soap have a messed up history. Like, really, really grisly, you know? I mean, anyone who's seen the movie Fight Club probably knows, at least to a degree, where soap comes from, or at least the very earliest formulations of soap.
Right.
From animal and or human fat mixed with ashes, and then it creates this, like, alkali, right? Like, we'll get to a lot of this stuff, but
sure.
I just was really kind of taken aback by some of the it's one of these accidental discoveries, but the circumstances that led to the accidental discoveries are quite gruesome.
Yes, so that is a heads up for you, friendly disclaimer. Still, we think it's such a fascinating and, dare we say, ridiculous story. The first thing you have to know, and this also shout out to our research associate, Mr. Max Williams here. This is something that I know is important to you, Max.
I almost said the line again, but then I respected Noel.
Don't do it.
So this is the first thing you need to know.
the world is filthy. Ever since the first guy looked through the first microscope, people have been kind of avoiding admitting that the world is riddled with bacteria, mm-hmm. all kinds of viruses, ugly, dangerous things. They're all over you, yeah. inside of you.
Can you imagine that moment, that realization where it's like, there's like tiny things that are just crawling all over us all the time.
Right, yeah.
I mean, this Dutch fellow by the name of, amazing name, Antoine Philips van Leeuwenhoek, who created lenses. He didn't exactly, I don't think he invented, did he invent the compound lens? No, he is credited with inventing the microscope, which is basically like a reverse telescope. You know, it's like it's using a series of lenses to magnify something that's very small,
yeah.
as opposed to seeing something that's very far away.
Yeah, he made a lot of contributions to the microscope, to microbiology, you name it. And this guy came into force back when it was pretty common for self-taught experts and scientist to make all these breakthroughs, and he just happened to look too closely at the world and found something terrifying.
Oh boy.
But we also know, just a pro-bacteria point here, we also know that your gut biome, the bacteria that live inside you, they are absolutely vital to a good and healthy life.
And I will also argue that short of like just living in squalor or like licking a public toilet seat or something like that, I don't know that I've ever seen someone like get sickened or die from just like the world. You know what I mean? Just encountering, like, I am a firm believer in the 5-second rule. If I drop a fry on the ground, I will brush it off and I will eat that fry.
No, you know? I read something on here that said, like, the transmission of the common cold would go down by 20% if everyone washed their hands for 20 seconds. So I read that and I'm like, nah, because I believe in the 5-second rule also.
Good. So, well, you know, we have to consider that there are so many moments in every human life where you've run into something that would have been really gross if you realized what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But you made it through because the human is a resilient creature.
That's my point, yeah. I think. It's like you're not just going to walk outside and inhale some piece of, you know, filth and then just keel over dead. But to that point, and I don't want to derail this too much, we're going to get into the story, I heard a really cool piece on NPR the other day about how there are some communities in the United States that are starting to move towards wastewater processing and like converting it into drinking water.
Well, that's a noble attempt, and it's one you would want to be very confident in before deploying.
Well, apparently they are. And they had to, they said the biggest stumbling block or the biggest roadblock is what they refer to as the ick factor. That like to sell the community on it, they have to like be on board. You know, they're like, you know, they would be like, okay, are you okay with using this to water your plants? Yeah, totally.
Like start
to
with
wash
gray
your clothes,
water.
Gray water. I recently installed a dehumidifier in my basement that fills up with water every single day, and it is apparently some of the cleanest water. It's already pre-distilled, and you know, you could drink it. The dehumidifier instructions say not to.
What do you do with it?
I water my garden with it, actually, which is right outside the door. So it's a little bucket. I pull it out,
and
I water the plants. So it's great.
Yeah.
Also, my basement has never smelled fresher.
Nice. And
because, as we know, bacteria, you know, forms in moist conditions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bacteria also produce your farts if you're human.
1,000,000%.
It's not on you. So another thing we need to know is right now, humanity is overall way cleaner than it was in days of yore. As Jim Neisel points out in Farmer's Almanac, centuries ago, the human race stank, and stunk. But today, things are a little bit different, all thanks to an invention called soap.
Right.
We got there.
We did. It took a minute. But that's okay. That's what the people are here for. I always think of that scene from Monty Python and the Holy Grail where everyone's just covered in feces, you know? Because that wasn't that far off. I mean, it's a hilarious movie. But, you know, without drainage for sewage, like there was a time where it would just run through the streets and soap wasn't a thing. And if it was, it was not something that everyone had access to for sure.
And now soap is ubiquitous. You go to various businesses and they will have soap for free. It's one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Soap is a $22 billion industry globally now. 13 billion bars are sold every year in the U.S. alone. But how do we get there? We're going to learn that with some great articles from our pals at the New York Times, some great work for Time Magazine, and of course, the cleaninginstitute.org, because that's, of course, that's a thing, right? That's another weird job. You're on a date and they say, so what do you do? And you say, oh, I work at the Cleaning Institute. That sounds sketchy.
Yeah, what, like, are you like a crime scene cleaner?
Right.
Like, what are we talking here? Remember, didn't they refer to, in that movie, The Professional, they refer to professional assassins as cleaners?
Yeah, I'm also thinking of one of my favorite weird Stephen King cameos in the TV show Sons of Anarchy. Is a small spoiler. He shows up as a cleaner. And in that use of the word, a cleaner is someone who covers up a crime scene.
Yeah, like Winston Wolfe in Pulp Fiction.
Yes, yeah, just so.
But when you think, to your point about the absolute buku amounts of money that pour into the soap industry, companies like Procter & Gamble, you may have heard of, you know, that represent tons of different brands, but some of them are, you know, like Ivory Soap, which is a legacy soap brand. You know, brands that are ubiquitous now, like Dove, Irish Spring, Olay,
I guess. Yeah. I mean, what?
Remember, they used to call it oil of Olay.
Yeah.
And now it's just Olay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fun word to say.
It is fun. But especially also, if you're a bullfighter.
What does that spring in Ireland smell like? Is it
fresh?
I guess.
Because of leprechaun magic, presumably.
And I got to be honest. Nowadays, I'm not like a bar of soap person.
Now, Max and I were talking about the same thing. It's lately the thing is much more body wash, which is still, you know, a similar thing. It's just a liquid form and it's easier to dispense. And, you know, bars of soap get gross. You don't really want to share it. Like if you live with somebody.
Yeah.
Can't really trust them not to rub it directly on their bits.
I remember bumming around. I was living a much different lifestyle. And I was going from...
Back when you were a beat poet?
I was going from hostel to hostel. And the thing that got me is they have bars of soap.
Mm-mm.
I know.
You see one little curly on there?
That's exactly what happened.
Nope.
So I was not, you know, I was by no means a billionaire, but I thought I'm going to have to just buy a bar of soap. It's my bar. I take it with me.
Mm-hmm.
I even got...
Wrap it up nice and tidy.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So so the liquid body wash stuff that a lot of people are using now is... It's somewhat poetic that that has evolved from the original soap. Here's the gross part we were teasing earlier. According to Dan Koppel, writing for Wirecutter out of New York Times, soap likely originated as an accidental invention, a byproduct of cooking meat over a fire.
Yeah. And arguably the best way to cook meat, first
I love
of
doing
all.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, yeah. Remember the spit turn dogs? That was the whole thing.
Oh, those poor guys.
Yeah. I mean, at least the spit turn boys got out of it, but the dogs were definitely overworked as well. But yeah, you have a giant metal thing attached to a crank that slowly turns meat over an open fire. Well, it does create delicious meat. It also has some byproducts, which can be used in their own way. If you've ever been to France, Ben, and I know you actually have, a big popular thing, and just a lot of like kind of what we would call bodegas, they have chickens that are roasting and the fat drips down onto potatoes.
Yeah, man.
And that's what's up. And you can buy the potatoes separately. But back in these days, they would be an open fire. So what happened is the fat would drip into the fire and then eventually the fire would go out, leaving all these globs of fat mixed in with the ashes.
Yeah, meat boogers and ashes.
Mm-hmm.
Two very unclean sounding things are key ingredients of what we call soap. Because
it's crazy.
Yeah, what happened was, you have to applaud the ingenuity and inquisitiveness of these earlier humans. What happened?
Like, who tried that? Who did something with that muck?
Who was like, I don't know, man, I around. Let's
see. Rub it on my face. I feel fresh, zestfully clean.
How much other stuff had they been rubbing on themselves? You know, they're like, I know the poison ivy didn't work out, but I got a good feeling about these meat boogers, guys.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details.
I mean, I just can't understand quite what aha moment would have led someone to realize that this chemical, this kind of slippery stuff that was created, was good at removing dirt. I also don't fully understand, scientifically speaking, how that even works.
We'll get to it.
I'm excited.
So you can see that after someone figured this out, they said you can rub this on yourself, it'll take dirt off you, and you can, for the first time in your life, be kind of clean. Everybody loved this. It became super popular. You can find recipes for making soap that are almost 5,000 years old. And it's all around the ancient world, Greece, Rome, Egypt, you know, all the hits. And alchemists made a lot of soap.
So how come it didn't catch on like in the Middle Ages when everyone was covered in poop?
Well, I will tell you, from what I understand about the Middle Ages in at least Western Europe, it was pretty rare to take a bath. It was often considered like a ritualistic thing, like a knight may take a bath once a year before the big jousting tournament. Otherwise, it's just sort of normalized to stink. So maybe soap was something that the elite would have. People were trying to be clean. We're not saying they were a bunch of degenerates.
I will say there's some stuff that coming up about why they didn't bathe in the medieval era.
I know what you're talking about.
I think I know a bit of it. There's a reason.
Some humorous level. Science.
Dare I say ridiculous.
I also remember like there was a thing we discussed in an episode a ways back about people washing their linens in urine.
Mm-hmm.
That was a thing. I think it was underwear. I think it was in the underwear.
It was washing underwear in urine. And then also while we're on the point of underpants history, check out the origin of pink lemonade. Remember that episode?
One. Clown tights.
The rise of the clown pants.
Let's just leave it at that. Yeah, sorry. It's just crazy to me that this is something that has existed for so very long, just based on some accidental stumbling into like, however this happened, we don't know. What we do know is that we have recipes dating back between either the 8th and 10th century from alchemists, like you said. And this is one here. Spread well-burnt ashes from good logs. It has to be good logs. Over woven wicker work, which I guess acts as sort of like a cheesecloth kind of situation.
Yeah, it's right? Like a colander cheesecloth, yeah.
And gently pour hot water on them so it goes through drop by drop. After it is clarified, well, let it cook, add enough oil, and stir very well.
So I want to point something out. You guys know I love food writing and reading. There's a great book called Choice Cuts that has a lot of strange old recipes. I'll bring it in one day. We should just read it out loud. And what I love is, just like the George Washington recipe, there's a vagueness to it. Add enough oil.
Yeah.
Get a goodly amount of whatever.
Enjoy liberally, I believe, was in the eggnog recipe that you were referring to. And this comes from actually a book called The Maypie Clavicula, which is a little, it's kind of cute. In Latin, that translates to a little key to everything, you know? It's like live, laugh, love, you know? It's kind of cute. I bet it had some like nice life hacks in it.
Yeah, it's like the how stuff works of its day. The alchemist recipe for soap said you need to use either olive oil or beef tallow, animal fat. And today, animal fat, along with lye, is still a basic ingredient of soap. Here's some of the science. So fat reacts with lye, and this can be pretty toxic. So soap makers, when they're making this stuff, they have to wear protective gear. Mm-hmm. The process that can be dangerous to humans is something called saponification.
That's right. And we believe that the origins of that word come from the Proto-German word sipo, which means to strain. And again, going back to that alchemist recipe, we're talking about straining substances through kind of like a porous piece of fabric.
Another greasy strain is another really gross phrase. I don't know why.
Not great, yeah. And to that point, Ben, the Latin word sebum is also associated with this, which translates to grease. Or another alternative is from something originating from Mount Sapo, which is a mountain in Italy where I believe there were like sacrifices being made or something.
It gets its name from, That's okay, so the sources aren't great.
Another meat and fat and ash situation, but yes, not consensual.
So while soap is still very much a thing in 2023, we have to be extremely clear with you folks. The soap from back in the day was very different. Early soap would not have looked cool to you if you traveled back in time and hung out in a Roman bathhouse. These soaps were probably, people have recreated this ancient stuff using those recipes. These soaps were like brown or gray. They were kind of soft and mushy. They didn't have any nice smells. At the time, they were purely functional. At the time, they were just a huge improvement. They were a game changer for hygiene because beforehand, before soap, people would clean themselves by rubbing their bodies with clay or scraping them with scraping pumice across their flesh.
Sure.
It was
still just pretty popular. People love a pumice stone.
I mean, it's just exfoliating.
True. But exfoliating is part of bathing. They were straight up exfoliating. Like, I don't know.
That was it. Yeah.
It's a dry shower is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of ick. Really quickly, we talked about another of the potential origins of the word soap, Mount Sapo. We alluded to some gnarly goings on at this place that apparently the location is lost to history. What exactly was Mount Sapo famous for in ancient Rome?
Oh, good save. Yes. Oh, I almost forgot about this one. Yeah. All right. Absolutely right. It is believed to be a hilly area somewhere near Rome. And back in 100 BCE or BC, whatever you prefer, there was a legend about this place. And the idea was that Mount Sapo was a sacrificial site for animals and rainwater. They would kill these animals pretty much constantly, and then rainwater would fall down and mix with the animal fat and ashes, and then from there it would run down to a river.
It's very interesting. It just, again, I always learned about stuff initially from the movie Fight Club, where Tyler Durden, Brad Pitt's character, is a soap salesman who gets his makings, his ingredients, by dumpster diving at liposuction clinics.
You get in situations.
You do.
And the thing about this river that we both thought was so cool is once these sacrifices, all the gunk and the remains, once it flows down from the mountain into the river, there are people washing clothes in the river. And they're saying, oh, wait.
This nighty's never been this clean in my life.
Yeah.
What gives?
This toga looks brand new.
That's better. That's more of a, we're more in the toga game.
The poop stains are all gone.
We should make more sacrifices. That's how soap started, according to this legend. But
it's a good legend.
It's a
but
good
it
one.
Seems a little apocryphal once again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it does lead, it does make more sense than the fat dripping into the fire and the ashes and someone just figuring out how to just to take it and rub it on themselves.
Yeah, you know? Unless this they were trying to eat the fat.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll tell you what, they never use bad language again.
Right, because they wash their mouth out of soap. So I think it was worth it. No joke left behind. We were talking earlier about why the Middle Ages, again, in Western Europe, were so very dirty. So let's explore that. Because although soap was an amazing discovery, people weren't always using it. It was considered a high craft or an art in Italy and Spain and France. They were making soap there. In the Middle East, people were also making soap with olive oil, and it was actually quite a flex to import that. So rich people in Europe were saying, ah, yes, my Middle Eastern soap.
Olive oil soap is still kind of like a bespoke sort of like popular thing.
Yeah.
You know, like kind of fancy hand soaps are all the rage these days.
You see them at hotels.
You do see them at hotels and also like places where they're sort of irregularly shaped and have like kind of weird like striations in them. They almost look like little blocks of sediment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fancy ones you see at the grocery store sometimes. But no, it's true. This was considered kind of a luxury item. So this is almost some of the earliest days of bath products as luxury.
Yeah. And a lot of people, of course, were making their own soap at home because these were largely agrarian economies, right? So you are on a farm, you raise and kill animals, and you want to maximize your productivity. So, of course, you have a soap recipe, you pass it down to your kids and so on. Interestingly enough, though, the fall of the Roman Empire is a big reason more Europeans didn't have soap, which I did not know that. I did not see that coming.
Have we talked about the term castile soap?
We have not yet. That's the one from the fancy soap in Italy, Spain, and France.
Yeah, so that was the name, and that is if anyone's familiar with Dr. Bronner's soap, very very popular. You can use it to clean anything, but it is. Like one of those kind of olive oil-based soaps that originated in Spain, and they are still around today and considered kind of the, you know, the holy grail of soaps.
Mm, yeah. And soap was kind of a holy grail in parts of Europe during the medieval period because, as we know from soap and detergents history, after the fall of Rome, bathing habits went downhill in Europe,
they really let themselves go.
And this contributed in a very serious and disturbing way to plagues, to illness, to infection. People were bathing and then they stopped. That's kind of what happened. And this was a big help to the fleas that traveled on the rats that brought the Black Death to Europe.
Oh, just a perfect storm of nastiness. Yeah, that was in the 14th century. But elsewhere in the world, folks were taking care of themselves, you know, in terms of their personal hygiene. In Japan, people bathed every day. It was very, very common. And, you know, we always think of Japan as kind of having their shit together. You know, in terms of organization, in terms of innovation, and just kind of civilization, you know, all the Asians.
You guys, got to go to Japan with me. We don't really have to hang out together the whole time.
No. I'll be right by your side.
It's just
all
so
three of
fun.
Us can be in a hot tub together in Japan.
They've got they're classy. They're called onsen.
Oh yeah, I know. I wrote the hot tub episode.
I'm into it. I really want to do this.
Yeah, it's cool for sure, and it's an important point for us to make that although a lot of people in the West only think of Western Europe when they think of the Middle Ages, the rest of the world was still there.
Totally.
You know, and didn't have all the same problems. In Iceland, people loved gathering together in the hot springs. Also, you know what, man? We got to go to Scandinavia one day. I would love to go there. I want to walk in a country where it's considered normal to have a sauna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, have a Schwitz.
That's so crazy to me.
Have you ever heard that referred to as a Schwitz?
Yes.
I think it's a Sopranos thing. I think it might be Yiddish, actually. But mm-hmm. It's, you know, just like getting your sweat on. And then, you know, there's even like, there's certain meats that are appropriate to eat in a sauna.
that part, the second part, I hadn't heard before.
Sauna sausage.
Sauna sausage.
There's a whole company, Atlas Obscura actually has an article in Finland. You cook sausages in the stones.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Don't you guys remember this from the Sausage War episode, the Anus Expedition?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
At the very end, we talked about it, like they have like a little, like in the saunas, they have just like a stone cut out that you put your sausage in and then you can cook it in there. And also Anu's Expedition. Remember that?
That's
a fun one to say. Yeah, that's how it's pronounced. Yeah, and now there are modern innovations that keep your sausage from getting soggy. It's like a little sleeve that you put it in. It's sort of like a stone, and the sausage goes inside, and then that goes on the rocks.
So they're doing hot pocket rules? Amazing. So there's another thing that happens here. Aside from the fall of the Roman Empire, medical experts of the time, working again with the limited information they had, they started putting out some scare pieces, some propaganda about bathing. They began to think that bathing was a vector for spreading illness, and powerful people believed them. King Louis XIV over in France was convinced that baths were bad for you. They were like unnecessary surgery. Apparently, he only took 3 baths throughout the course of his life and just, you know, covered his swamp stink
with scented oils and lotions and perfumes.
I've done that before. Every time.
In a pinch? Sure.
Every time I go somewhere and I smell a little bit like cologne. A
little underarm spritz.
Yeah, it's because I have not showered.
It's definitely true.
Question for you guys. Have you guys ever put deodorant on a turd? I haven't either. I got asked that once when I was a teenager.
Oh.
That's a weird question. Why
but basically, what it smells like, they said, was deodorant and turd is what it smells like. Like the deodorant doesn't cover it all.
I see what you're saying.
It's just both still there.
So this is a hypothetical scenario.
No, this person actually did it.
But what?
And they acted like this was a common thing to do.
It's not.
No, it's not. Agreed. Thank you.
It's definitely
I'm such
not.
A yes-and
person, friend of mine from
end
of middle school told me to do that, you're wrong.
I once pooped my pants in middle school and hid it in a drawer in my friend's house.
I once pooped in another guy's pants.
That's crazy. You win. You win.
No.
All this is coming out.
I don't think any of us won.
Or staying in.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
But here's what I do know. I always thought of King Louis XIV as a real fancy lad.
Me too.
You know,
wasn't he the
Sun King? Wasn't he like the Versailles guy? You know, and he wore like fancy ruffles and was all into the height of fashion and all of that stuff.
He was, yeah, Louis the Great.
Yeah,
and he was, I think, the longest running ruler of France.
Yeah, and then didn't his.
And you're right, he is the Sun King.
Yeah.
His grandson was the 16th who got shoved into the guillotine.
I think that's right.
French Revolution is right after the 14th.
Yeah.
Point being, though, is I just didn't really pick you. You look at all these paintings of him with his glorious flowing locks and all of this stuff, and you just don't picture him smelling like crap.
Yeah, but Adolf Fredriksson was very in shape and skinny, and he was the king of Sweden who ate himself to death.
Yeah. Yeah, but he just loved those buns, man.
Yeah, I mean, so like these paintings are generally not true.
Well, not super duper accurate. I mean, imagine if you are the painter and you have to make a picture of the most powerful person in the country who can just have you killed if they don't like it.
Shove you to a guillotine.
Yeah, you are going to, you know, zhuzh it up a little bit.
Sure.
Give them some definition, you know.
I would also say that the modern equivalent would be like the way that social media pictures are curated. Like, nobody's that happy. Nobody lives that happy a life. Is so contented.
Agreed. Social media curation and portraits of royalty may not be the full truth. Soap is now modernized. How did it become a modern thing? Well, technology. There were advances in production and more sophisticated manufacturing techniques that are responsible for the soap we have today. Soap is way older than the United States, obviously. And the soap making business in the U.S. is also older than the United States. It started way back in the 1600s, and it wasn't anybody's job. It was just another household chore you had to do. So if you think laundry stinks now, folks, imagine another part of doing laundry was making the soap you would use. So you're like, oh, my clothes are getting pretty dirty. I guess I have to kill an animal, render its fat, start a fire, make some soap, and then find a river.
You know, I have noticed that some kind of more traditional soaps, they don't really smell good. They kind of have an acrid kind of smell to them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, even just like a really basic bar of soap, when you wash your hands in it, there's a certain chemically kind of unpleasant odor. Yeah. Certainly trumps whatever odor was there before. Trumps it, gets rid of it. But the smell isn't pleasant. It wasn't until oils and scents were introduced that became more of a thing.
And this, you know, it reminds me of a common scene in grocery stores. When you go to the cleaning aisle, it'll typically be on a bottom shelf. You'll see that soap you're talking about. I always think of it as the industrial stuff. It's like the soap, the lye soap, the kind of thing that can hurt your
hands if you touch it. Yeah. Or, you know, that's literally the substance that's used to, like, dissolve a body.
No comment.
Okay, fair enough.
So we'll call Stephen King. There's something unique about the early North American soap industry. It gets started because of bacon and candles. lighting in general was a big part of commercial cleansers because both making candles and making soap, both of them traditionally rely on byproducts from animals. So as the U.S. becomes more industrialized and people are less and less likely to raise their own animals for meat, they're going to purchase stuff from butchers. That means they're also less likely to make soap at home.
So that's when we have, you know, the first steps of the, I guess, soap industry starting to pop up, right?
The soap revolution.
The soap revolution. But it's earlier than you might think. Back in 1791, we've got a French chemist by the name of Nicolas Leblanc.
Yeah. He patents this process where you can make soda ash from salt. Soda ash is important because you can combine it regular fat and you'll make soap. And that discovery, LeBlanc's breakthrough, makes soap making one of the fastest growing, most explosive industries in the United States. By 1850, we also see real life factories coming into play, and the soap business is booming. It's good to be, this is back when you could be a soap tycoon.
Yeah. I mean, and it even like, I think there were like traveling salesmen and stuff like that, you know, with their suitcases full of bars of soap. And this was also the time where, remember that propaganda of like, you know, the previous era that sort of made people question soap. Now we have, I think, a little bit more medical kind of support for soap. That's good. And like expressions like cleanliness is next to godliness and all of that stuff.
God is empty. It's just like me.
He is. He really is. It's cool to be clean, though. You know what I'm saying? This is definitely starting to be the message. So during the Crimean War in the 1850s, we have Florence Nightingale, a very important figure in the history of medicine, who's credited with kind of changing the way nursing is done, and really made a big deal about washing those hands because that could potentially save lives by preventing the spread of cholera.
Yeah, yeah. And she's in the pantheon of people who were underappreciated by civilization, I would argue. She's up there with Semmelweis, the guy who asked surgeons to wash their hands before they do operations, right? Or assist in childbirth. So this is very important stuff. Also in the mid 1800s, in 1837, there's this candle maker out of Cincinnati, William Proctor. And he says, oh yeah, well, making candles, making soap, I have the ingredients for both. And he puts them together. He teams up with a guy named James Gamble and makes a company that ultimately becomes not just a huge deal in the soap business, but the world's largest consumer products company ever, Procter & Gamble.
P&G, baby.
P&G. What do they not make?
I don't know.
Humans.
Yeah.
As of now.
Yeah. They're making prototype humans. So Procter & Gamble is also one of the first soaps to gain national distribution. It's the Ivory brand, which is still around today, right?
Yeah, and it's still distributed by Procter & Gamble. They're the kind of company that's just been in the game for so long, diversified so much, and they've created so many like ubiquitous kind of brands. So remember that Castile soap we were talking about from Spain that was sort of the fancy lad soap? This plain white soap was designed to be competition for that, like perhaps the people's soap.
The people's soap, soap for the people. Yeah. It was pretty affordable. And the name was from a biblical passage. The company said the name of the soap is an indicator of its purity. There even came to be a kind of modern legend, a creation myth about how ivory was made. The story was that there was a mixing machine left on. Someone took a long lunch break and extra air accidentally pumped into what was being mixed. And in 2004, weirdly enough, people working for Procter & Gamble went through Old Man Gamble's diary from 1863.
Rude.
Yeah, they read his diary and...
Dear diary.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
I got a crush on this boy.
Dear Diary, I made floating soap today. I think we'll make all of our stock that way. So the legend.
That was the quote.
Yeah, that was the quote. The legend was probably made up.
Got it. But here's the thing. A lot of the soap that you think is soap isn't in fact soap.
Bum, bum, bum.
What? It's a scam. There's a lot to be said, as we alluded to earlier, about the chemistry of soap and how it actually works. It's something that's always eluded me. It just seems like a mystical substance. A lot of these manufacturing processes stayed very much the same until 1916 during World War One, and then there was another change that happened during World War II, as often is the case during wartime, because of shortage and things that were needed as part of the supply chain. Because a lot of these fats that were needed to make chemicals were being used elsewhere, probably for those like K rations or whatever.
Yeah, and back to our pal Dan writing for Wirecutter. He said German engineers figured out they could use a different cleaning product that didn't need animal fat and ashes. It was a synthetic substance they called detergent, Latin for to wipe away. Detergents didn't have soap. They used enzymes that, through chemical reactions, lift stains off of clothing and skin. American companies get on board with this, and again, the early 1900s, and they start making new detergents and mixing ingredients up to see what other properties they can discover. And eventually, after the times of privation had passed, they were left with something that actually worked better than the original soap. And they said, okay, well, you know, history is cool, but we're going to have to go with a thing that's a better cleaner.
Yeah, it also doesn't like suds up the same. It behaves differently when mixed with water. Like, I don't know if anyone's ever been unfortunate enough to accidentally put the regular soap into a dishwasher or something like that. You're going to have like suds shooting all over your kitchen.
I've totally done that.
It's a rite of passage as an adult. but that's the thing, like with, you know, if you look at what laundry detergent does, for example, in the washing machine, it's not full of bubbles. It's much like, you know, it's clearly a different process.
It's more of a smooth operator.
It's a smooth operator. It creates kind of like this slurry, you know?
And as a result, like you were saying earlier, man, what people are calling soap today is not completely soap. Most of the cleansers, the majority of them, liquid and solid, are going to be synthetic detergent products. And people like these products because they don't form gummy deposits. The origin story of them is not as disturbing to some people. And modern cleansers also include a lot of other ingredients, stuff to make it the bar of soap brighter, stuff to make the liquid, you know, look bluish, water softeners, antibacterial stuff like alcohol. And these bars can have some of the same ingredients as soap. Like when you see, what is it? The animal fat's still in some of them.
That's right.
It's just not called that anymore.
Yeah, and some of the main ingredients in these are something that we both tittered at, I guess, a little bit off mic. Sodium tallowate. It's just because it's a funny word. I don't know why.
It feels like someone trying to do pretend Latin.
It does sound that way. And then sodium lardate, which sounds like what it is. Or it can also include vegetable fats, such as sodium palmitate and sodium cocoate, which sounds delightful. But chemically speaking, they're not actually soap. But it does seem that they're obviously chemically or like scientifically, in terms of what the process is, doing a similar job, right?
Right. Yeah. And this is one of, Max, I think this is one of the big questions for you, right? And I appreciate this because we've got to give a shout out to our alma mater, How Stuff Works. Maybe we end here. How does soap actually work? Well, it's less of a disinfectant and more of what you called, Max, I think quite appropriately, a germ slip and slide. They're not killing the germs, they're moving them. The slipperiness of soap lowers the surface temperature of water when you mix them together, and rubbing your hands together while washing gets the dirt to temporarily bond with the water and soap, and then it leaves with the water.
It lifts it right off.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Just like those commercials.
Exactly. Leaving you zestfully clean. I'm sorry, Ben. I think you got that jingle stuck in my head a little while ago. I think it's, you're not fully clean unless you're zestfully clean. Yeah.
It's jaunty. It's a jaunty jingle. And this has been a pretty fascinating episode. It took us a lot of places. We got into some pretty dark territory. We got into some really interesting stuff about hygiene, and we're going to have to continue the journey next week.
Our personal hygiene journey?
Our personal hygiene journey. Yeah, man. Look at us. All three of us are being pretty good now. We're working out. We're taking showers.
Oh, man. I took one 3 days ago.
I feel like you're high-roading me, but congratulations.
My best. My favorite place it took us was the top of the Sacrifice Mountain.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine finding that place in the modern day?
Probably pretty creepy. Piles of bones and whatnot, like the Predator's lair.
But it would be an adventure.
Indeed it would.
Until the Predator eats you.
Thanks, as always, to super producer Mr. Max Williams. Thanks, research associate Max Williams. Thanks to Chuck Palahniuk. Thanks to Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Thanks to Ed Norton.
He's apparently a bit of a pill, but he's a fabulous actor.
Mm. And, of course, thanks to our own theatrical professional, Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister.
Indeed. We'll see you next time, folks. Stay clean. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.